This is the Meat Eater Podcast coming at you shirtless, severely bug bitten, and in my case, underwearless.
We hunt the Meat Eater Podcast.
You can't predict anything.
Presented by OnX Hunt, creators of the most comprehensive digital mapping system for hunters. Download the Hunt app from the iTunes or Google Play Store. Know where you stand with OnX.
And yeah, like, you probably want to be like within a foot of the bottom.
And then when you feel it, you just kind of like jerk it up and then pull it in, or?
Yeah, you want to do like an exaggerated setting motion.
And are the rods always this short?
Yeah, that's the normal length.
That's the normal length.
That one that Steve has over there is the custom long daddy.
And like, what's the logic about the really short rod?
Because you're fishing such close quarters, you know, along the rod, you had to be 10 feet back, you know?
There you go. Drop it down a little.
There you go.
Leave it. Don't move it. Oh, you scared him. Hit him. Yay!
Bryn, why are you aiming that up at the sky?
I don't know.
Okay, lift him up, Kryn. Closer to your face. First fish through the ice?
Mm-hmm. First time on the ice.
How about ever? Have you fished before?
Mm-hmm.
Fish these rods.
Are you all set up, Phil, for us inside?
Okay, everybody, welcome. We are in a giant.
Oh, get Jimmy! What are you doing?
Yes. Okay.
Get him out of there.
Yeah. In a giant Eskimo ice shanty.
Oh.
Fishing. The bite is on and off. This thing is this shanty's bigger than our podcast studio. It's called the Fat Fish. It's got like what else? It's like the Fat Fish something.
I just saw the Fat Fish. It's a 9-person shanty.
Yeah. We're fishing 1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh, there we go.
We're fishing
we're
7.
Yeah.
We're on.
Miles is on.
Ooh. Oh,
fuck!
Goodbye.
And that's why you need to bring a little mini gas. Lost it at the hole.
What about that like soup ladle thing you used to scoop the ice out of the holes?
The soup ladle?
That would have worked.
Yeah, you know that.
The skimmer?
The skimmer.
If you you must eat some thick ass soups. if you scoop soup with a skimmer. The bite is on and off. We got some cameras down. We got a camera down that looks so good. It's like the Markham Quest HD. It's like I feel like we're like you could watch the Super Bowl on this thing. Like right now we're watching a bluegill give my little boy the stare down. Here he comes, Jimmy. Oh, rejection.
He's just looking at it.
Yeah, bigger than the podcast studio. Here we are, 9-person shanty. We're gonna talk. Spencer, explain the main thing we're gonna do. Like, explain what the explain the fact checker series.
Last time I was on the podcast,
I think you should call it the ball buster.
That might confuse people.
That might. Yeah. You'd get a whole different sort of. Go ahead.
Last time I was on the podcast, we covered some of the recent fact checkers that I had written, like, should you drink urine in a survival situation? The answer is no. Our daddy long legs.
So, yeah, it was like Bear Grylls' entire career is based off a false notion.
Yep. Yes. Yep. Another one we talked about, our daddy long legs. Steve with the bluegill.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Are daddy long legs the most venomous spider in the world? The answer is no, and there's a whole bunch of things wrong with that statement. You can go back and listen to that episode with Danielle and I if you want to hear more about those. So those are some of the things we cover in the Fact Checker series.
Yeah, can I ask the Fact Checker question?
Mm-hmm.
What if you're like, yes, in fact, it's true? Do you get less interested in it?
No. Because one of the ones...
You like the ones where it's wrong.
I like that. I think within the series, I've only had a handful that are true. One of them was one that your best buddy and amateur historian...
Oh!
Oh,
he missed it twice before he ate it.
Oh, come on, button. You were watching?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, sorry.
One of the true ones that we recently covered was one that Joe Rogan loves to repeat. And that's that during World War One, they had to have a ceasefire to like beat down the wolves that were moving in on them.
And you, and that's like a legit story.
That one was true. In 1917, there were a bunch of newspapers like the El Paso Herald, the New York Times, the Oklahoma City Times. I think those were the three places. They all reported on this. This dispatch came out of Berlin talking about how the war that was fought in like these rural areas had displaced large packs of wolves and had them moving into like these small villages and stuff. And they were taking down a bunch of goats and cattle, and in two instances, children. They killed children. The wolves also ended up like just going to the front lines and eating on wounded fighters, and it was all true. Historians estimate that they killed hundreds of wolves during this time. The two
sides even took a break from shooting at each other to kill wolves.
They decided
feeding on wounded people.
They decided to have a ceasefire if this were to happen, and it did happen.
Is it hard to focus talking to someone who's catching so many fish?
A little bit. It was so bad that they described the wolves as a plague. And that one was true. It's hard to believe, but that one happened. So some fact checkers are in fact.
I think the facts. Like European wolves are like sort of a different kind of groove, man.
Because
like in Romania, you get like, you know, just, they're more inclined to European. Look at this. They're more inclined to. Man, it's very hard to do this. it's very hard to host while you're... Well, I almost need to put down my rock.
Oh, you got another one.
Oh, dude, I'm just like on fire. European wolves are more inclined to bite folks.
One of the quotes from the 1917 New York Times article said, poison, rifle fire, hand grenades, and even machine guns were successively tried in attempts to eradicate the nuisance.
Corinne, why in the world, when you're fighting a fish, do you know what a rod's supposed to do?
But I caught it, didn't
she caught
I?
It.
Correct. Yeah, you did.
No, but
you
I'm did. Doing I'm doing this like
okay.
Like
it's customary when fishing to not point the rod
at the sky.
Directly at the sky. You're shooting for a sort of like you want to think of it, you're shooting sort of a 90 degree angle.
Okay.
Between the yeah.
Yep, I see what you're doing.
You're moving it so that your rod is. I can't really. Someone who's got the vocabulary to explain what
I mean.
Does.
I can explain what I'm doing. So like, instead of moving the rod vertically up,
keeping
kind of
in parallel, where, with
in
the
parallel
eyes.
Exactly. I am like whipping my wrist back so that the rod is like at a. What is this?
Yeah. Do you know how long I've been fishing?
Perpendicular to the ground?
Yeah. No.
I have never seen one. I've never seen someone do that.
I take that as a compliment.
Maybe I feel like...
You didn't do enough guiding, Steve.
Tell me
all these things.
Tell me more about... Tell me more. Give me some more. What all fact checkers should we discuss today?
So you said these European wolves like to bite. One of the quotes of the New York Times article was... The wolves, nowhere to be found quite so large and powerful as in Russia, were desperate in their hunger and regardless of danger. So it agrees with you there.
Like this displacement and all this warfare had driven them to dire measures.
Yeah. Yep. And then the two sides took dire measures and started fighting the wolves instead of each other.
So what got you interested in that fact checker? Was Rogan? Was it Rogan talking?
Oh yeah,
You know,
he repeated it so many times. Yeah. And I'm like, I surely hope this is true because that's a large audience that's hearing that.
Yeah.
Just nailed him.
Yes.
Another perch in the house.
Just nailing him.
Yep. He's tearing up. You want to keep that one, bud?
You want me to keep this one?
Couple things we're gonna talk about. I got some like comments. That I tried to keep them mostly ice related. You'll watch. It's you're gonna see some elastic. You're gonna see some hosting.
Okay.
Some very flexible hosting.
Mm-hmm.
One I just can't figure out. Maybe someone can help me how to make it seem relevant to the ice. One is this is one I need help on. We were talking the other day about ethanol and gas and what it does to, like boat motors and whatnot. The guy from Steel Chainsaws wrote in with some clarifications. like why, you know, when you see when you go to a gas station, you see like the big signs, ethanol free or low ethanol and all that. And we're talking about to what degree is that old, like do you know, like old engines didn't like ethanol, but modern engines supposedly tolerant. The guys from Steel Chainsaws were saying that ethanol can start breaking down and separating from fuel in as little as 1 week. They're saying that when running machines for extended periods of time, you can use the E10 fuel with the right oil mixture because the ethanol doesn't have time to break down. He's talking about like your vehicle, like you run through gas in your vehicle quick enough where it's just not, you know, not lingering. But he said the number one problem with small equipment seems to be fouling from ethanol. When it breaks down, it can gum up the carb and fuel system and break down the rubber hoses. They say if you're using ethanol fuel, they recommend you run the fuel all the way out of your engine before you store it for an extended period of time. They say that either way, for equipment, they say that non-ethanol fuel is preferred. And Steel actually makes he goes on to say this, that Steel makes pre-mixed fuel with no ethanol called Moto Mix. So they make like a pre-mixed fuel and now a regular fuel with no ethanol called Moto Mix. And it's saying that when you buy these cans of this stuff, it has a shelf life of over 10 years when unopened. Huh?
Nice.
You guys think of that. What are you doing, Yanni? Looking up how to fish?
Oh, bass on.
Oh.
First one.
Foul mouth bass coming up.
Big mouth Billy.
Big mouth Billy coming up.
Is he taking drag?
It's fighting so hard that Miles' camera's rocking back and forth. Oh, but I'm onto one. Oh, I think your stupid bass tangled my rod.
Feels like it.
No. Oh, they stripped me.
Man, Miles, that's a long fight for a
how loose is your
ice?
Drag?
It's very loose.
No,
he's playing it soft.
It's very loose drag.
Get him. Big mouth.
It's not that big.
You're tangled up. Giant.
That'll holy make a nice cow. Fried fish sandwich.
No, we're not keeping that fish.
Yes, please. I love largemouth.
It's...
Why would we not keep it?
Daddy, please.
Miles caught it. It's his fish to decide. Wow. I don't need that fish.
It. If you
people
want
like
to clean
catching
it.
Those, people
I'll
like
clean
catching
it.
Those.
I'll clean it. Please,
no,
clean
Jimmy.
It. Yes, that I will. I swear I'll
do. People like catching those big bass, man. People
Miles
come down.
Might accidentally drop it.
No, give it to me.
I don't understand why we would let it go.
Because people
because,
come down
there aren't
and
that many bass in here.
People want to come down and catch those things.
There are very few bass in here.
Unlimited numbers of perch and bluegills.
Well, I promise I will keep all the perch and bluegill for you, buddy, but I'm going to let the bass go.
The perch and bluegill are not as cool as bass.
I agree.
Yep, but people like to catch those things. You're kind of in a local town pond here. You don't want to
catch a bass, I'm keeping it.
You're in a local town pond and yeah, you're allowed five a day, bud. Here's a good one.
Hold on. What do you? You looks like you're loading up a lot over there on your bait.
You know why? Because I'm hosting, and when I'm hosting, I'm not able to pay as much attention as I'd like, and they keep stripping me.
Oh.
So I'm trying to find some way that I can keep in the game.
Okay.
And they're my worms.
I just wasn't making sure.
And they're my worms anyway.
That you're doing something over there that might help me catch some fish too.
No, I'm just trying to keep in the game when I can be inattentive.
All right.
How do you make that ice? Oh, you know, I know how to make it ice applicable. You know another thing that'll mess your engine up? Is if you drop it through
the... water in your fuel?
You drop it into the ice. Spencer was saying that you dropped... we're talking about who dropped the most expensive thing down the hole. I saw a lot of spuds go through.
Mm.
Not a lot, but I've seen spuds go through. We one time dropped a 330 Conibear down through a hole in the ice trap in Beavers, but we were able to get it back out with a long pole. But you lost your rangefinder.
I put a rangefinder down one. I think like any good Midwesterner, you seamlessly transition from hunting season into fishing season.
Like not into skiing season or
no.
something stupid.
Mm-mm. No.
You go into fishing season.
Yep. So you're wearing like the same warm bibs that you were hunting with in December. And then you go ice fishing in them. Forget your rangefinders in your jacket. You lean over, rangefinder down the hole.
That
doesn't happen real often.
Did you make any attempt at retrieval?
No, I think it was like 20 some feet of water. We weren't getting that one back.
You know how we've been covering this Isle Royale situation?
Mm-hmm.
So like Isle Royale in my home state, It's an island up in Lake Superior. It's kind of like, at a map, it looks like it more like belonged to Ontario. They got kind of screwed, it seems. It's our, it's Michigan, it's America's island. Kind of looks like it should belong to Ontario. Miles, you on?
I'm on, buddy.
Oh, nice perch.
Nice perch.
Isle Royale. We've talked about, you should go back and listen to the whole library episode. So the thing of the Isle Royale is kind of crazy, where historically, I'm not talking like way ass ago. I mean, in the modern era of the United States, Isle Royale in Lake Superior was a lynx caribou island, which is kind of crazy to think about. But over time, it transitioned and stuff like comes and goes across the ice. And at some point in time, this is a little bit controversial, like how this happened. Fish on. At some point,
can I interrupt just for a second? I need some bait. Can you give me one of those eyeballs? Are we allowed to use eyeballs here in Montana?
Technically,
no.
It's a game fish part. You have to use a sucker eyeball.
All right. Well, don't give me an eyeball then. I'll take one of them worms.
So Isle Royale, historically, out in Lake Superior, northern Michigan, was had lynx and caribou on it. And at some point in time, and it's a little bit like, there's a little bit of debate about how this happened, but moose, probably the lake froze and moose walked out and got on the island. And at some point in time later, when the ice is frozen, this island got colonized by wolves. And people kind of really like fell in love with this sort of moose-wolf situation out there. And it sort of became this thing where like everybody's like, oh, it's so great. We have moose and wolves out on Isle Royale, and it's all great and happy. But over time, you've had these kind of like wild fluctuations. And right now, you have a diminishing wolf pack where the existing wolf pack that was out there got down to like two wolves. So someone had the great idea of to increase the naturalness of this place, they would just truck new wolves out there. And they truck new wolves out there. And the first thing the new wolves do is kill the two existing wolves that lived out there. And they're still not getting the moose population under control. So this state representative named Stephen Johnson from Michigan's 72nd district, he's sponsoring some legislation in the state that's moving out of committee and passing through the state house that would be a resolution. So it's basically a thing that opens a conversation where a resolution suggesting that the National Park Service should be using hunting to limit the wolves on Isle Royale. And some people got all they're all worked up about this, but he points out that this would be a thing that the National Park Service has done this. They've used hunts to control other wildlife populations in the past. You kind of have this little bit of like aquarium situation out there, I feel, where you know, it's this small, almost like experimental little place. And I think it's a great idea because everybody's talking about there's too many wolves. They're eating themselves out of house and home. People would be happy to go hunt them there. The wolf thing is not coming along right now. It'd be a quick solution to the problem. Some people are freaked out that, oh, they'll just wind up hunting the wolves into extinction. But he points out that they monitor these moose very closely. And they can just decide if their numbers get down, they can decide some year, nice job, buddy, to issue zero permits at all. So he's offered to come on the show sometime and talk about this. We got an email from a waterfowl researcher, so like a duck researcher, who's doing work on ducks in breeding and other things. And one of the things they're looking at that's kind of interesting is they're looking at the implications of what's called game farm mallards. And up until a couple of years ago, I had no idea there is such a thing. But we were in Chesapeake Bay. What were we doing? We were hunting sika deer, right?
That's right.
And I was looking off this bridge, and it's kind of like a famous duck hunting area that we were in. And I'm looking off this bridge, and there's all these mallards that, like, for being during hunting season and in a heavily hunted area, these mallards are just kind of like sitting and acting weird in a weird place. And I commented on it. And a friend of mine was pointing out how those are like game farm mallards, which people come and they're like, man, I want to get a duck. I don't care. And so they raise these mallards up and let them go, and people kind of pretend to hunt them.
What was the locals' term? They had a term for those ducks. You remember? Was it just dummy ducks?
Dummy ducks? That might have been it.
Can't remember.
Yeah, it'd be like if you're like, you kind of like the sounds of hunting, but you're not actually any good at it, or you don't have patience, what you can do is you just go and have a guy make duck. It'd be like hunting. Let's say you were hunting, you wanted to go hunt grouse, but you couldn't figure it out. So you just hunted chickens instead of a farmyard. But in this case, they raised ducks up, and then the ducks kind of look like a wild duck, and then people pretend that they're hunting them when, in fact, they're just kind of shooting them. So this guy's looking at, like, what does this mean for wild duck populations? And they have all these ducks from museum specimens. They've got museum ducks that they were able to do genetic work on that go back to 150 years ago. And they're looking at a couple things. One thing they're looking at, like, what is the relationship of black ducks and mallards? And earlier, there was this earlier work that suggested that black ducks, as more and more mallards came into new areas, that it was making the black duck through hybridization. The black duck was kind of vanishing and becoming a mallard through, like, inbreeding. Or not inbreeding, but hybridization with mallards. And they found that, contrary to that, that's not actually true. But the interesting thing is these, like, fake duck farms, the dummy duck farms, are in the Atlantic Flyway. And in looking at it, they find that these flyways are actually, like, the Western Flyway. So they go in and look at what were mallards like. You guys tracking what I'm saying here?
I'm following you.
They're able to go look at, like, what were mallards like 150 years ago, okay? And then what has happened since people started doing these game farm mallards? And they found that in the Western U.S., the mallards are the same as historical mallards, okay? So specimens from 150 years ago still resemble ducks in the Western U.S. But they've established that in the Eastern North America, so in the Eastern part of the country where you have these game farms, that mallards are not genetically the same thing as they were 150 years ago. Huh. Inbreeding with released game farm mallards is the source of the unique genetic signature now found in high abundance across the Atlantic Flyway. And sadly, that's me saying sadly, not him, to some extent now being found in the Mississippi Flyway. The Eastern mallard, so mallards in the Eastern U.S. are becoming a game farm wild hybrid swarm.
Oh. Huh.
There is, if you kill a mallard in the Eastern U.S., there is only about a 10% chance that that duck is pure North American mallard.
Oh, that's really,
it's about a 90% chance that son of a bitch is part fake mallard from game farm stocking practices. Wow. Not a bummer.
The hunting should be easier, huh?
So, I mean, do you consider what we're doing right now fishing?
You mean because we're fishing introduced fish?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like if we're going to say that hunting for introduced ducks doesn't count as hunting, then
no,
what we're
not
doing right
ducks.
Here...
If we were in a little... You know when you go to a sportsman show and they have a kiddie pool filled with trout?
Yes.
Do I think that's fishing?
I'm going to go ahead and guess no. And
I
would agree with you.
That was fishing. Game farm mallards are not, it's like preserved pheasants and wild pheasants.
Okay.
You're fishing wild fish.
Not
they were introduced.
In this moment we are, but there are plenty of places where you're fishing for hatchery raised fish that have been planted. There are tons of put and take stocked fisheries all over this country.
Yeah, I would call those semi-fake fish.
You would call those semi-fake
fish. But here's the thing. Picture that you're in a place where you already have something good. You have mallards. You have wild mallards. But you're taking something that's existing in there and corrupting it by adding like an easier version of it. It's not the same thing.
So, I mean, we do have an example of that from fishing.
Lay it on me.
I would say all the stocking practices that are happening on the West Coast with anadromous fish, with your steelhead, with your salmon, those are contributing to a population decline in the wild fish, but people love to catch them.
Okay.
And they want to be able to take those fish. You've got a whole industry built around taking fish.
Yep.
And as a result of that, you've got a diminishing wild population.
Then condemn it.
That's a tough thing to do. When you condemn that, you're essentially shutting down any kind of harvest from those fisheries because the wild stocks are so down, they can't sustain them.
Okay. That may be. And I agree that there are a lot of areas with fisheries and even some areas with hunting that are confused. Okay. but I don't feel the need to be so consistent that I can't point out a version of things that I think is kind of perverse. And I think that having in an area that has wild mallards and wild duck hunting, to have it be that you're, and that's a native bird, right?
Absolutely.
It's a native distinct bird. And you're corrupting that in the exact same landscape where it survives. It'd be like, let's say you had an air. Okay, here's a great example. Take Gould's turkeys down in southern Arizona. Mm-hmm. Okay, you have these island mountain chains that have had these historic populations of Gould's turkeys. That someone said, yeah, well, Goulds are cool, but there's just not that many of them. And they started just dumping shitloads of pen-raised eastern turkeys into those mountains. Would you feel that that was a travesty?
Absolutely. And for the record...
And then you lost the Goulds turkey.
For the record, I am not in favor of the practice that you're talking about, and I'm not happy about this change or the information you just laid out. It was more of like a semantic conversation about yes. that doesn't count as... hunting when I just sort of thought, like, I'm sitting here catching completely non-native fish out of a stock pond thinking, does this count as fishing? Right? So I think there are these very fine lines that you have to look at.
Sure.
You can talk about how introducing certain species to be able to hunt or fish them has negative impact on the native species. And that's problematic. Right? And that's one argument. But then to yeah. say that introduced species don't count as hunting, like, that gets to be problematic, I think, for people. I think that gets to be an issue that can be sensitive and can rub people the wrong way.
Okay, so I'll change all my words around. I'll say the same thing, but use different words.
Okay.
In this case, I think that is trying to say different words that aren't swear words. we'll let it rest.
Yeah, no.
I'm sticking by my analogy. Okay, let's say this. Let's do this one. You're here in the Rocky Mountain West. Let's say you had some pristine high mountain lake that had some beautiful native cutthroat that had been in there for thousands of years doing its own thing. And they're rare and they're hard to catch, but they're there. And then some days, some guy's like, you know what to make this lake really great fishing? Is let's dump a whole bunch of a different kind of cutthroat in there because they get bigger and they're easier to catch. And then 150 years later, someone looks and says, you know what? That unusual, like, endemic trout that was found nowhere else doesn't exist anymore because some guy thought it was too hard to catch.
Absolutely. And, I mean, that happens. This is not, we're talking about hypotheticals, but a lot of the fish species, the trout species around here were put in because they get bigger and they're easier to catch, or maybe not easier to catch, but more fun to catch than the natives. What did they do? They outcompeted them.
We're on the same page. One last little bit of listener feedback. We were talking about the gnome unicorn, or the gnome catching a mermaid shirt, the controversial gnome catching a mermaid shirt. And the guy's wondering, are mermaids oviparous or viviparous? You guys know what that means?
No, I was just going to ask you what both of those words mean.
You don't know?
Oviparous.
Viviparous.
And viviparous.
This guy that asked this question, his signature line, you know how you'll have a signature line that just tells you like what you do for life or whatever? His signature line is a college student.
Does that mean do they breathe underwater or do they breathe
has
air?
To do with reproduction.
Oh.
So viviparous are those creatures who produce living young instead of eggs from within the body.
Oh, no. Okay.
In the manner of nearly all mammals, many reptiles, and a few fishes. Oviparous are animals that lay eggs with little or no other embryonic development within the mother.
Ovum. There we go.
So, like a perch, for instance, here, would be an oviparous
eggs.
Creature. Yeah.
Got it.
But viviparous, would, like, you know, there's some, you ever see some sharks that have, like, an egg sac that they have with, like, a very developed, it'll even be, like on them.
Uh-huh.
A like very developed out, yeah. little shark inside it. But he's wondering about mermaids. That's a great question because I don't know what... I don't really even understand the orifice scenario on a mermaid.
Oh, hmm.
Like, I don't know. What orifices are on a mermaid and what they do and how many there are.
Do they even eat?
They have
they
might to.
Not. They gotta eat.
Why? They live in a fantasy world.
Yeah.
Maybe they subsist off of dreams.
Yeah.
What do you think? Do you think they...
Like that there's no sex for mermaids.
Oh, so then they'd be... Okay.
Yeah, no idea.
No.
I like to think that they have that as part of their lives. That's it for listener feedback. Now, Spencer, let's dive into this. Because I want to dive back into the fact checker situation. That's what we're here to talk about. Fact Checker is a series. Are you the only person that writes fact checkers?
Brody Henderson has written a few.
Fact Checker is a series where you take things that everyone knows to be true because they were told that it's true by their grandfather, who learned it from their grandfather.
Yep.
And passed along from generation, and you just know that it's true.
Right. Outdoorsmen specifically.
Yeah, these are outdoors fact outdoorsmen.
Mm-hmm.
Things that we all know are like, oh, of course, everyone knows that that's a buck shit.
Yep.
That's not a doe shit.
Yep.
Or that's a buck track. That's not a doe track.
Mm-hmm.
Or that little spike horn will never become a big, huge, giant buck because he's a spike horn.
That's right.
And everyone knows that a spike is never going to be a big buck.
Mm-hmm.
Or, hey, that's a 6-point. He must be 2.
All things that are like just widely accepted among sportsmen.
Full moon, that's no good for hunting.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The most recent one that we covered was about...
Spencer, I was so distracted that a fish almost took my rod.
But it didn't.
But it didn't. I caught it just in time. Go on.
The most recent one was, do you lose half of your body heat through your head?
Of course you do.
I think all God-fearing Midwestern parents have repeated that to their children.
I've heard as much as 75%.
I know. I was going to say, I thought it was 70%.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
when I tell my kids, I'm like, they're like, I'm cold. I like, put your hat on. But my head's not cold. I'll tell them, yeah, but all your body heat goes out your head.
Perfect.
So that's like my I'm cold. Put your mittens on. My hands aren't cold. Or my hands are cold. I'm like, put your gloves on. But my hands are cold. Or I'm sorry. My hands are cold. I'm like, put your jacket on. But it's my hands that are cold. They think that each thing has its own little life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for these fact checkers, I always try to track down the origin of where these things might have started. And it's often not very easy. But this one, it was very specific about you losing half of your body heat through your head. And it...
Where's the bait puck?
The earliest mention of this is from the U.S. Army field manual in the 1950s, which said...
Isn't that full of a lot of, like, weird, bogus stuff? A
lot of stuff, yep.
Hmm.
How could that be true?
Because it was the 1950s, I suppose.
Oh, so you think it's a lot of ideas that have just fallen from favor?
Yeah. Yeah, so this was from the 1950s. It said you lose 40 to 45% of your body heat through your head. This idea has been revisited since with better science, more specific science. I don't even know what they were basing this off of. It was something about some Arctic studies that they had done where they had people bundle way up, but leave their head not bundled, and then... They tracked how cold they were getting, but it wasn't very accurate. The more modern studies have shown that this is not true. You actually lose 7 to 10% of your body heat.
Oh, wow, that's significantly
through
less.
Your head.
Not 50 to 75%?
No, no. It's actually pretty simple. It's just like the amount of skin showing, the proportion of that to the body heat that you lose. So, like, your head is like 7 to 10% of the skin on your body.
Yeah.
So then that is the amount of heat that you'll lose.
Huh.
And so it's like simple. If you were wearing shorts in the winter, then heat is escaping through
nice
your legs.
Yummy.
If you're not wearing a hat in the winter, then heat is escaping through your head.
What if you have like a lot of hair and you take a shower and your hair is wet and you go out? And it, like, is cold enough where your wet hair turns to icicles, which sometimes will happen with me. Is the head some kind of conduit, though, for...
That's a good question.
Colder temperatures or something, just because there's...
Maybe. The modern studies didn't look at women showering and walking outside. So I don't know the answer there.
All right, we'll have a
missed opportunity.
Simply put, the amount of heat you lose is proportionate to the amount of skin showing.
Okay, interesting. All right.
Hit me with another one. Hit me with another thing that I know is true.
Another one. So big box stores, if they find out. Hold on, you said?
You're telling me that, okay, I had a hard time with the transition there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go on. Because I'm trying to fix my boy's fishing rod.
Okay, okay. So another one that all outdoorsmen have heard at some point is that if somebody kills a big giant buck.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That then their phone is blowing up with phone calls from outdoor stores like Sportsman's Warehouse, Cabela's, Bass Pro, Gander Mountain, all clamoring to buy the antlers from whatever you just killed.
Which I know is true.
You've heard this before, right?
Met someone.
I know a guy that sold.
And I'll tell you, when you're done, I'll tell you the story, because this might be the exception to the rule. But go on.
Yeah, so you
shoot a big buck, and all of a sudden you get rich because you sell it to a big box store.
And you hear about this every year.
I've heard about my whole life.
Yeah, yeah. The earliest one that I can think of, when I was a kid, one of my buddies in his house, his dad had this enormous whitetail rack above their fireplace. It was a perfect 4x4, and it's the biggest 4x4 I've ever seen in my life. And I had been told that Cabela's had called them every year, offering them like more and more money. And
like persistent.
Yeah, yeah. And they had just turned them down. Like, nope, it's a family heirloom. Our grandpa found them on the farmland. We're not interested in giving them up.
But Cabela's would not let it rest.
Would not let it rest. That was like the earliest example I can think of this. But every year.
And what amount of money did it get to?
So let's come back to that at the end. About like what?
No, what kind of money were they getting offered?
Oh, I don't know.
According to the myth.
I don't know.
Okay.
This was a middle school memory that I since revisited when I called his dad to see if that was a reality or not. But yep. I put out a calling to other people who've killed big giant bucks, big giant elk, to see what their experience has been. And one of the guys that got back to me was Joshua Bruce. He killed the second biggest whitetail in Mississippi state history.
Oh.
Wow.
And it was shortly after he killed this deer. He
got Jeff Foxworthy. No, that was Georgia. Sorry. Recently killed like an arch or some kind of biggest archery buck for the year.
Didn't know that.
Go on.
So Joshua Bruce, he killed the second biggest buck in Mississippi's state history.
Okay.
Shortly after he killed it, he got an offer from a local sporting goods store owner for $30,000 to $35,000.
For real.
For the I want to know, is it for the originals or does the cast count?
Yep, for the original.
Wow.
So Joshua was mulling over this offer, and he had taken his time. He had taken about a week to decide if he was going to accept this offer. And before he was going to get back to this sporting goods store owner, this local chain in the South, Bass Pro approached him with, quote-unquote, a better offer. Now, in the contract.
No shit, but they're wanting to buy it.
Buy it.
It's like mine.
It. Yep.
Yeah, okay.
So in the contract that Joshua signed with Bass Pro when he ended up selling these, it was agreed upon that he couldn't disclose what the exchange exactly was. So Joshua.
Oh, because they're trying to protect the market.
Yeah. Joshua couldn't tell me what Bass Pro paid, but he said it was a better offer. With that better offer came a large exchange of money. They then gave him some replicas as well, and they are now displaying that buck in their museum in Springfield, Missouri.
So he did the sale.
He did the sale.
This is an interesting thing, too, because you can't sell game meat, but you can sell parts.
So it's a great example of this. Joshua killed his deer on, I believe it's Miles Island or Giles Island. It's this world-famous duck and deer hunting island that is positioned between Mississippi and Louisiana. You can hunt there with a tag for either one. He had a Louisiana tag that he killed this deer with. And when it came time to sell it, it hit a snag because in Louisiana, you are allowed to sell antlers because they're considered like a piece of art.
Okay. Mm.
But in Mississippi, it's considered part of the game animal. So you couldn't do it. So he had to actually end up getting like a written letter from local game wardens and the DA allowing him to sell this.
No.
Yeah.
And it was some amount of money, more than 35 grand.
So he couldn't, I asked him that specifically. He couldn't say yes or no.
Because he signed a deal never to disclose
right,
the sum.
But he said it was a better offer to him. So it could have had something to do with the replicas that he was offered. It was also very valuable to him to have it in that King of Bucks display at the museum. So I don't know the exact amount of money.
Huh.
Luke Brewster, he recently killed.
So this is one of those fact checkers that's true.
Yeah. Yep. But I think it's rarer than people put it.
Okay, go on. Then I'll tell you the story.
Every time
I'll tell you a version of how this went.
Yeah.
But go on.
Luke Brewster recently killed the world
record.
Who's
that?
He recently killed the world record whitetail.
That's what he's famous for.
Yes.
So he's not someone I should know prior to that.
Nope. Okay. He killed this world record whitetail in Illinois in 2018. He was offered a blank check, basically, for his deer.
And well, he said no. That can't be true.
So he
could have put down $3 billion.
No, I don't think so.
You got a little perch over there, huh, Yanni?
Yeah, I'd like you to. I didn't want to interrupt earlier, but now I will. This is my second perch of the day. I got a slow start, but it's picking up for me.
He made it very well known that he wasn't going to shop his deer, and so he just hasn't got any offers since.
Oh.
He's hanging on to it.
Yes. He's not interested in giving somebody the real thing, even if it meant he could have a replica of his own.
He's a fool.
The replica part of this is interesting. Where part of the deal is they'll make you a replica of your deer.
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting.
Somebody else who didn't want to be in the article. They didn't want their name used. Like they let me interview him.
Who
and
was
they,
it?
They told. they gave me all these details.
I don't like being with Yanni when he's fishing because he doesn't catch that many. But then he doesn't pay any attention to anything anybody's talking about. But go on.
So I promised him I wouldn't write about it, but I'll give a few details.
You held
here.
Your promise.
Yeah.
That's good.
Spencer's a man of his word.
But I won't
Spencer's
even,
like a legit journalist.
Yeah, sometimes. I don't even want to say what kind of animal he killed because it might be too easy to figure out. It was in recent years. This guy killed one of the biggest of this critter in the world.
Wow.
What color is it?
Steve, he then
tannish.
He then got offered $100,000.
Really?
And he turned it down. He was not interested.
Who recently shot the biggest something, Yanni?
I don't follow that kind of stuff that closely.
And he didn't want me to discuss this in the article because he didn't. He said there's crime in the area he lives, and he didn't want it to be out there that he had something in his home worth $100,000.
That makes sense.
That somebody could just break in and thief it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So that's why he didn't care to have that written about or have any specifics.
He didn't want word out.
But $100,000 is what he was offered.
Doesn't want to do it.
Wouldn't do it. And just doesn't even want it known.
It's kind of like, that's cool. I respect it, but it's kind of hard for me to picture.
Oh, yeah. When I was writing this.
I just take a bunch of pictures, get the replica made, and then take the $100,000 and go hunt my ass off.
My wife tested me. She asked me, she's like, what would it cost for someone to buy, like, your biggest deer mount? And I was like, $300. $300 would like pay for the shoulder mount and sell them. I'd be fine with that.
Man, I got student loans.
But then at that
loans,
point, why did
mortgage,
you have it done in the first place?
Phil, you got student loans still?
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're still pretty young, though.
Yeah.
Why did you have the shoulder mount done in the first place if you'd sell it for
to
break even?
I like having it. Okay, maybe not 300, 500. How about that?
That's it? That's still
I'm just
low.
Like, it's not so important to me that I can't possibly not have it. I have the memory. I have the pictures. Like, those things.
Okay, but
way more people will ever see the pictures of the deer than they will the exact antlers.
I want to...
But that's not what we're talking about. I want to go back to, let's say, Spencer. If you killed the state record whitetail for South Dakota, would you sell it?
I could give you an example. I killed the state record Rio Grande turkey with my bow in South Dakota.
Oh, come on.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, no, I believe you, but I just don't believe that I don't believe in
turkey
scoring of turkeys.
Oh, okay. It had three beards. It had three beards, weighed like 23 pounds. I have all this documented.
Yeah, okay. But this is not going to be a good counter argument because no one really cares about
so you
have
the
turkeys.
State record turkey. Just
Rio,
so people understand.
Rio Grande.
We have to help people understand. There's a thing. There's a form of mental masturbation called turkey measuring. And turkey measuring, correct me if I'm wrong, Spencer.
Okay.
It's the turkey's weight. It's some function. It's some, like... some expression.
Weight.
Of the turkey's weight.
Spur length.
The length of his spur and then the length of his beard. But if the turkey gets multiple beards, you measure them all so that some people have turkey beards that are in the 20s.
Yeah, so mine, for example, had a triple beard. It had 11, 9, and 7, so 27 inches of beard.
Wow.
Which is like that's the big multiplier when you score.
Okay, let's continue this. So you have a world record.
I have
a state record turkey.
State record. I think it's like
it's
number
the state record archery turkey for South Dakota.
I think it's like 13 in the world
and
for
what,
archery equipment.
And no what kind of offers have you been fielding?
I have tried to give it away. I've called the Smithsonian Natural History Museum. They're not interested in it. I've tried giving it to Bass Pro and Cabela's. They're not interested in it. I don't have it mounted, though. Like, I have all the fan, the beards, the spurs, all that stuff is preserved. So all they would have to
you
do
have
is just
take
it.
You have what you need to get it mounted.
Yes, and then they would just mount it and pay the $500 or whatever it is to mount a turkey. But nobody's interested in it. And that was also part of this fact checker is that one guy who didn't want me to give his name was a former trophy curator for Bass Pro slash Cabela's.
Yeah.
He said that these places are sitting on such a big inventory of mounts that a lot of them will just never see like a showroom floor because they're not like clamoring to have just like average critters anymore. And so to them, a Rio Grande turkey with three beards is just like, don't eat it.
Mm-hmm. Yanni will now tell you the story that we know. Ooh, Yanni tied into his third fish of the day. Yanni will now tell you the story we know, and I'll have my thumb up or down depending on how good of a job I think he's doing at remembering the details.
Mm-hmm.
So my thumb is level right now.
Well, I think you should just tell it. I don't remember the details all that
he
well.
He already gave
up. Are you talking about Buck's story?
Yeah.
I mean, I can give you a very, very
go ahead. Let me hear. Let me hear what you got.
Very, very abridged version of it.
Do you remember the circumstances under which he was hunting?
No. I remember. You mean that he was guiding somebody?
He wasn't.
But I thought that he was guiding somebody, and then they didn't kill the bull, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. And it was a giant. He was like, dude, you should really kill him. And the guys didn't like something about the bull's antlers. Didn't have enough brow tines or wasn't wide enough or something. And Buck's like, you're an idiot. Later, Buck's out hunting by himself, and he's like, No, he was just out hunting by himself.
Yeah, you remember this really well.
And happened to come
across. You remember it better than I do because I forgot the part about the client.
Come across the same bull. And Buck wasn't looking for that bull, but happened to come across that same bull and shot it. And then I don't know how it all went down, but somehow he ended up getting a large sum of money
for it. It's some crazy, a giant. I don't want to throw a number. A giant moose. He would bring it because he would go down to the Harrisburg sportsman show.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's heading there next week.
So he would go to the Harrisburg show and he would to book clients and he'd bring this big ass moose skull down there to be like, hey, look at the giant moose that come off my place. Right. You can picture this.
Mm-hmm.
He'd use it as like an advertisement. Well, the way he tells it, one of the Cabela's brothers, I feel like you're like Dick Cabela's or whoever, sees it and he's like, man, do I like that moose. So sends one of his fellers over there to negotiate, and then Buck sold it for like a pretty good chunk of money.
Mm-hmm.
Tens of thousands.
Yeah.
I don't remember how many tens. Two tens? Whatever it was. He's probably pissed because he didn't ask. He was not like, got a good chunk of change for this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows where it's on display now.
Yeah. And if he wanted badly enough, he could have a replica made of it.
Yeah.
And still come out ahead.
Do you know why did you do that one? Like, where did that one come up from? Just your own mind?
Yeah. Because that's just like such a common thing you hear at the bar or the guys drinking coffee every weekday morning at 8 a.m. talk about whatever.
Yeah.
And like I said, back to that middle school example of my buddy's antlers on the wall. I called his dad when I was working on this because I thought that would be the best way to track down if this is reality or not. And he said, no, he had never gotten offered any amount of money for those antlers. That was just like a schoolyard rumor. The only offer that he ever got was from a guy in town offered him a brand new washing machine for the antlers.
Huh.
He said no. Turned that down.
$3,000-$4,000?
I don't know.
I don't know what's the washing machine cost. Dishwasher or clothes washer?
What, like clothes washer.
Huh. You know what brand? What model?
I don't know. The guy owned a furniture store.
Oh.
And the guy with the antlers told me, he's like, yeah, you know, I just think if our wives knew about that, we'd both get divorced because his wife would be upset that he was offering a wash machine for antlers, and my wife would be upset that I turned him down not taking a new wash machine for antlers.
Oh, that's a good point. So they had to keep it secret.
Yes, but it was not, it wasn't like I remembered it from middle school where Cabela's was blowing up their phone every year.
Upping the offer. Being like, at some point, he's got a crack.
Yep. Yep. Okay. So it absolutely happens, but it's not like as prevalent as you think, where every year so-and-so in your county kills a big something, and then Cabela's is just showing up with fistfuls of cash or Bass Pro.
Okay, hit me with the next one.
No, I still want to know if, Spencer, if you killed the record, South Dakota record.
South Dakota record.
You'd sell it or keep it?
I'd sell it. You get,
how much, though?
$5,000.
That's it, huh?
What about you guys?
It wouldn't take much.
Yeah, I'd sell. I'd sell for sure.
Yeah,
because they're just material things.
So is money.
Yeah, but money can be turned into
experiences.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you.
Or philanthropy. I don't know. Whatever, you know? But it's just like, I don't know.
But there still has to be a point at which you would or wouldn't do it. I don't want to like belabor the point, but for saying like I have a nice mule deer. I have a mule deer that I'm very happy to have.
Mm-hmm.
If someone said they were going to give me a couple $1,000 for it, I wouldn't take it.
You wouldn't.
A couple $1,000?
Yeah. What about like $15,000 or like $20,000?
Yeah.
Yeah. Gets up there. Okay.
They'd have to do me the replica.
Okay. All right,
20, sure.
20, yep.
We used to play a much worse version of this. And it was basically like, at what dollar figure would you do various things? Mine involved Larry King. I don't want to get into details.
Yeah, I think we can put it together.
I came in surprisingly low. And people were shocked at how low I came in at to do a certain activity with Larry King. Okay, hit me with another one, Spencer.
This is another one that when I talked to our editorial team, we had people from California to South Dakota, Pennsylvania. Everyone had heard this, and it was just like an accepted deal. And it's that baby rattlesnakes are more dangerous because they can't or
won't. I'll tell you why. I already know why.
Okay, all right.
Because they have little baby venom, and it's more potent, and they haven't yet developed the mechanism by which you stop the flow of venom.
Mm-hmm.
So that when this baby rattler gets a hold of you, he just, in this spasm of lust, lets all of his venom into you and you die.
Yeah. They just can't control.
Of course that's true.
Right. And then on the contrary, that assumes that a large or an adult rattlesnake would control that and wouldn't throw as much venom.
Because he's more mature and
right. And they need something. Developed. They need something in the reserve for later. Because if a rattlesnake doesn't have venom.
Oh, that's why he does it.
That's interesting.
Well, that, okay. Like, it's just part of the potential explanation. The reality
is... And that's
is,
all true.
It's all false. It's all false.
No, I knew it wasn't true, but I'd still tell people... I still have told people that throughout my life, and I've definitely heard it.
Mm-hmm. So young rattlesnakes and old rattlesnakes alike can control the amount of venom that they throw. And the probability of you getting a dry bite, which is a bite without venom, is just as likely whether it's a 1-foot rattler or a 5-foot rattler.
Oh, really? So, like, if you're out and you, God forbid, have a snake bite you, it's very possible that there's no venom in that, and there's...
Yeah, they can choose to not throw any venom at all.
Oh, really? Like, he makes the choice.
Yeah.
I thought when it was a dry bite, I didn't know that it was a conscious decision of the snake.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was, like, just the whatever, you know, like the circumstances, or he was low on venom, or... So he can just be like, I'm going to get you, but no venom.
Yep. So age is an indicator of... Or excuse me, age is not an indicator of whether or not they'll give you a dry bite. And if I remember this correctly, they're more likely to throw dry bites when they're like feeling defensive, like get the hell out of my face sort of thing.
More likely to throw a dry bite.
Yes. Whereas like if they want to kill something that they're going to eat, like a snake.
Yeah.
Or excuse me, like a rabbit or whatever, then they'll use their venom to kill it. And it helps with the digestion, I believe. The venom does. So if they're like defensive, more likely to be dry. If they're
interesting,
view something as prey, then it's more likely to have the venom.
Crin's on to one.
I wonder how many. There we
Ooh,
go.
Ooh, jumbo perch. Get him up.
Double. Oh, no.
I wonder how many people get bitten by a rattlesnake and don't need the anti-venom for it because there's no venom in there.
Oh, like, yeah, that's
right,
a good point.
Like, you know.
Like, you see a rattlesnake bite you.
Right, mm-hmm. And
you run down and you're like, holy shit, I got bit by a rattler.
Yeah.
So what do you then do?
There is some truth in that smaller snakes can have more potent venom. But venom has over 100 active compounds, and it varies based on a number of things like age, diet, location, how long ago it ate, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So a baby rattlesnake could potentially have more potent venom.
Okay.
But adult snakes store 20 to 50 times more venom. So, like, a simple way to put a bow on this is that the bigger the snake, the bigger the consequences.
Okay.
Even if a baby rattlesnake has more potent venom, it does not outweigh the fact that a large rattlesnake can throw so much more venom at you.
The load size is so different.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Hit me another one. How many do you got right now?
I got a few more.
Yeah, let's keep
going. A few more.
Hit me another one. Jimmy, get him, buddy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I got him. Oh,
he's on the
camera. Hold tight.
So another one is that you can identify a buck versus a doe by the scat.
Yes.
This
buck
is one
scat.
This is one you've heard?
I've heard that you can identify a buck versus a doe with the scat. But more than that, I've heard that, and there is something to this, that you can tell that there's a difference. You'll be able to help me with this. Winter scat, summer scat, there's a difference, but it's not actually that. It's just like whether they're eating browse or green feed. So
yeah,
just roll that into the whole thing.
We'll talk about it. Yanni, is this one you've heard too?
Yeah, I
Where's
think
the bait
so.
Puck? Who's got the bait puck?
You can, I think so. I've heard it said sometimes between bulls and cows.
And like one, what's the difference?
One comes out like a big glob, and the other one comes out, in pellets.
That has to do with what they've been eating.
Yeah, I think so.
So that's a widely believed thing, is that a pile of scat that's in pellet form would be from a doe, whereas a big pile of like lumpy scat would be from a buck.
Yeah.
And I heard this from like one of the smartest deer hunters I know, and he heard it from his grandpa. So that like,
and he's been walking around his whole life being like, "There's a buck scat."
Yes, he is as good of a whitetail killer as I know.
Do you? Okay, go on, because I want to ask you if you believe in this in turkeys.
Yes.
Okay, but go on.
Okay. So like that was the origin.
So can you
me
tell? Let's just start. Let's go. Let's clean it up because we're making a mess out of this. Can you tell a buck's shit from a doe's shit?
No. The reality is that when you have the pellet piles, that is an indication of what they've been eating. So when you have the pellet piles, that means they were eating firmer foods, drier foods like leaves, twigs,
more
acorns,
of a browse.
Grains. The lumpy piles of scat means that they're eating softer, more moist foods. Like grasses, fruits, clover, alfalfa.
Yeah, like when you're out in a fresh hay field, you're likely to find clumped up, clumpy poops.
Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with the sex of a deer. It's not that bucks and does have different digestive tracts, so they're throwing out different scat. And I'm also like, I want to be cautious when I'm writing these that I'm not creating a scarecrow man for some of these, meaning that I'm not like taking something that isn't really widely believed and just like throwing this out there so I can then
and pretending
tear it down.
That it's widely believed,
right?
Yeah.
But this
That's
was
smart.
One. This is one that I was fearful of, that it was like making a scarecrow man. But
like you feel like it's not discussed enough.
I thought maybe this one isn't actually that widely believed, and it's just
Yanni. You're under giant bass right now.
I don't know what I'm
Oh wow,
Yanni.
I'm just pulling something up, but
he's on an old
weight?
It's an old boot.
Yeah, it feels like dead weight.
Yeah. What do you got?
Were you on the camera?
It popped off.
Oh.
Huh.
No.
Just chunk weeds.
Hmm.
Okay. Tell me about turkeys now.
Well, so hold on.
Oh, okay.
So I wanted, like, I was worried that this might have been a case of that I was creating a scarecrow man to, like, tear down
exactly
with this. But, man, did people come out in the Facebook comments. Like, we had 500 Facebook comments the first time this article was posted.
Saying, and, like, no.
Saying, you computer nerd, that's not right. You need to spend more time in the woods.
Computer nerd.
I know this is true. And one of the theories as to why this is true is that a buck spends more time in its bed, so then it has the crap building up in its system.
I like
it
that.
Just comes out all lumpy. Whereas does, they're just moving around all the time.
Shitting everywhere.
So then their crap just comes out, just spraying out in pellets.
500 Facebook comments.
500
so the
Facebook
buck's
comments.
Pellets are compacted into a lump.
That was what many people wanted.
And if you
to
spent more time
in
the woods,
comments.
You'd know this.
That's right. Yep. So then afterwards, I felt vindicated that this is something many, many people believe.
It's no scarecrow, man.
Yeah, and before you, like, write in to Steve or me or whatever, about half of those 500 comments were people saying that the only way to actually tell is taste. I heard that funny joke many, many times.
Okay.
And it just wasn't funny anymore. So no need to tell us that one again.
I do believe maybe you should check into this. I'm a firm believer from my experiences that I can smell the difference between not does and bucks, but bull and cow urine.
Oh, I buy that. Put that on your list, Spencer.
I feel like when even in the woods, when you smell elk, you can smell a bull or you can smell cows.
And yeah.
Sometimes I want to think that the bull's urine is browner and more concentrated for. I just missed one.
Oh, I thought you had a accent.
While we're on the
subject. Talking
about
urine. Yeah. No, I really do believe that.
I could buy that one, especially during the rut. Whoa, what do you got here, Corinne?
You guys are on each other. Hold on a minute.
Oh.
You guys, stop
reading.
Look at that fish.
Son of a
that fish ate both. That fish ate both jigs.
Nah, I've never seen that.
You know what? He's coming on chartreuse twice.
Wow.
Okay, Corinne, pull.
What a gluttonous fish.
Tighten your drag down. You got a whole mess. Crank. Crank, 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 crank. Oh, that's your line stop?
Yeah.
Okay, you're good. Man, that means someone is not fishing well. Because that fish had to move a long ways undetected.
I'm not, you know, two things at the same time. I'm focusing on Spencer. What's Spencer's
okay,
saying?
Okay, Spencer's back up now, man. That was fun.
So another one that I covered was... Does gutting a critter?
Oh, hold on. I want to back up.
Oh, okay.
Are you going to fact check? Is your next fact checker going to be called Can Giannis tell a bull's piss from a cow's piss?
We could do that. We could try it, Yanni.
All right. And then the turkey thing.
Yeah.
But I know it to be true that a hen turkey has a different shit than a tom.
Yeah.
A tom throws a J hook shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know why? Because something about how it's something to do with the shape of the cloaca and like the reproductive organs and whatnot. And a hen has a little squirt and a gobbler throws a J hook turd. You buy that? Fact check that.
I do buy that.
Huh.
But I should fact check just because I can't always be like, nope, this isn't true. Your dad was wrong.
Okay.
So this is one we could be like, yeah, yeah.
Throw that in your fact checker.
Your hunting mentor was correct.
Yep. Throw that in your fact checker. I got them all day long for you, man.
Mm-hmm.
You want another one?
Sure.
Is it true that if you heart shot a skunk, he won't spray? Is that widely understood? Phil, you know, do you understand that to be true?
It's the first I've heard of it, I got to admit.
Another one I wrote that was inspired by you was, does gutting something make your farts smell like guts.
Now, yes, people, listen, not inspired by me. Not inspired by me.
Somebody inspired you.
I would say
it's
no.
It's a very, people are ready to fight over this.
No.
This issue almost caused, when we were doing live podcasts, it almost caused a riot in the audience when I said that no. People know that there's rabbit farts, duck farts.
Yep.
That's a drink, actually. That's a pretty good ice fishing drink. Yeah, that you gut something, and then later you will pass gas.
Okay, let's hear the scientific answer. Because
well, I'm trying to lay out what the theory is.
No, that's good. No, yeah, I'm glad. I just, all those people that want to fight about this, I just, they're a little childish.
Okay, go on.
So I want to do some, like, some polling for this. I reach out to 10 of my buddies that are the biggest hunters I know, and I asked them if this
you
experience.
You didn't ask me?
Yeah, how could that be true? You didn't ask me.
Besides you guys.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Who do you know?
Six of the 10 of them said it happens to them.
Why didn't you ask me?
Because you texted me about this, so I assumed that you were, like, confirming this is something that happens to you.
No. I don't think this happens.
Okay.
Why didn't you ask Yanni?
I assumed Yanni was with, like, I assumed
you
guys.
You're just sitting there dialing up all the people you know that hunt
the
most.
And Yanni.
And never talked to me. Wait, Yanni.
I can add you to the polling. So now it's 6 out of 11. Yanni, has this happened to you?
No.
Nope. Okay, 6 of 12. 6 of the 12 biggest hunters
so you're,
I know.
You're, you know, that's a very statistically significant change.
Yeah, yeah. So 6 of 12 said it happened to them. A few of them specifically said that, like, birds are the worst. Like, ducks and pheasants, they create the worst gut farts later on.
Gut farts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I then found a forum that had discussed this a handful of years ago, and it had over 100 responses. The question was, does gutting a bird then make your farts smell like guts? This had over 100 responses to it. 23% said that it happened to them.
Oh my God.
Okay, hold up a minute now.
Mm-hmm.
Corinne, you don't gut a lot of things.
No, okay. I don't.
Is this, as you're hearing this, are you thinking like, oh, that makes total sense?
No, it sounds like complete and utter nonsense.
Yeah.
I mean, what are your, like, the guts of an animal release into the air,
yes,
and your skin pores suck that into yes. your system,
and then it goes
it
into
somehow
goes turns into yeah.
flatulence,
uh-huh. yeah, into your intestines,
yes,
into air pockets in your intestines, and turns into flatulence.
It can be explained, but we know it's true, don't you know?
Yes, that's what happens. So now Spencer will give you his bogus explanation.
So the answer is
his foolish explanation for this.
The answer is no.
What?
Gutting something does not then make
yeah,
your gas.
Okay, but here's my problem. Here's my problem with this one.
Uh-huh.
How is this? Who's researching this?
Me.
Okay.
But so I mean, hold on. Like maybe it's like there's some kind of smell or something that's released into the air that is like stuck in your olfactory system, and then
and
you
it's
like
only
fart
liberated?
And you like can't forget.
And
like,
only farts can liberate it.
Yeah. What does that have to do with like your
no. That's not what she's saying. She's saying that it's stuck in your olfactory. And then later, you or your buddies fart, and,
yeah.
and because it's in there, you smell it, and you go, oh, doesn't
yeah,
it have a
yeah,
tinge?
Yeah. That's what I mean.
Well, no, because picture,
yeah.
okay, picture this. Picture there's a half dozen guys. There's a half dozen people hanging out. Not guys, just men and women mixed.
Yeah, they both fart.
Okay. Men. There's a large group. Five of them the day before had been gutting rabbits. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The sixth was else that they couldn't go.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're here at this. They're here drinking beer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the five who were gutting rabbits, their flatulence will resemble the smell of the rabbits. If it's trapped fart particles stuck in your nose that are then liberated by farts, then that'd be a way to, I don't know. You see what I'm getting at? That'd be
yep.
a way to test it.
Yep. Okay. So,
because they don't have those particles stuck in their nose, the sixth person.
Yeah.
So a fart would enter their nose.
They would say, no, that just smells like a normal fart. I don't smell rabbit
guts. No, dude, that just smells like all of mine. Not like my rabbit one. Okay, yeah. Go on.
So you texted me about this at the end of October. You had been.
I want to clarify a point.
Yeah.
I texted you this would be a good thing to look into.
Mm-hmm. No. I know. So you texted me at the end of October. I had killed a deer that weekend, mm-hmm. and this has never happened to me before. You texted me about this. I then had a bowel movement later that day. And it smelled like the mule deer guts. So at that moment, I knew. I'm like, this is
psychosomatic.
In my head.
Seriously?
Because Steve just brought this to my attention.
You had a bowel movement.
Yep. And that had never happened to me before where it smelled like that.
It really could have been psychosomatic.
So then the real research.
Do you use that word often? Those two words? Bowel movement?
No.
Yeah.
No. I thought for your listeners.
Yeah. Oh, I appreciate it.
Best. Young ears here. Jimmy. So the farts are composed of swallowed air and then a cocktail of gases like carbon dioxide, hydrogen, and other trace gases. So if this was going to be a reality, I had two theories.
A fart has a lot of nice fish. Get them up.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, Jimmy's on one, too. Doubleheader. Get him, buddy. Oh, got him.
High five, Jimmy.
Perch and a bluegill.
Okay, so flatulence is composed of swallowed air. A mix of noxious gases.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Corinne, give yourself some slack. You're going to poke yourself all the way.
And what else?
Just open the bale.
Just like a cocktail of gases and swallowed air.
Okay. Gotcha.
So with that, my theory was then that this could either be like a transdermal thing where you're handling the guts a whole bunch and somehow it like seeps through your skin. It's just so powerful that it then affects your gas. That could be one thing. Or another thing is that you're huffing these fumes so much while you're gutting an animal that because there's swallowed air that creates your farts, that like the smelly air is then changing how your farts smell.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are the two things I thought, okay,
because what else could it be?
So I reach out to Dr. Alan Lazara.
Yep.
Been on the podcast before. And he said firmly no. And he said, what's happening here is described as deja vu.
I love it.
And he said,
I remember this email.
It's not.
My favorite part of it was deja vu.
Yeah, it's not 100% explained, but it's one of two things going on. Either remnant gut pile particles are resting on your nose hair, your mustache, your beard, your hands, whatever it may be.
And they're liberated by someone else's fart.
Corinne, you
knew. That's what Corinne was saying.
I don't think that doesn't make any sense.
So that could be one of the things.
Oh, my God, I guessed.
Another is that the memory of game gut odor is triggered in the hippocampus and mammillary bodies after smelling another similar-smelling fart down the line.
Yes. Huh.
And his quote was that olfactory signals, which control our sense of smell, go through the hippocampus and mammillary bodies, which are integral to memory formation and recall. So it's similar to, like, if you smell banana bread and it makes you think of your mom.
It's
like that. Your memory and your sense of smell are very, very closely linked.
Like, if I had a bunch of rotten eggs.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a bunch of rotten eggs. And it's sulfury. Then a couple days later, someone rips one. And you're like, oh, right?
Yeah.
Because you're remembering how nasty those rotten eggs were.
Mm-hmm. So deja vu.
I love that term.
And when we posted this one on Facebook, there were many, many people that volunteered to have me smell their farts. So then I would know that this is, in fact, what happens. There were also many people that volunteered their wives to confirm that their husband's gas smells like rabbit farts or deer
gut
farts. Yeah.
Huh.
It's the same people who told you to eat the pellets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Same people. So, many volunteers.
So people wrote in to say, go ask my wife.
Yes.
My flatulence smells like a rabbit that I gutted.
Mm-hmm.
Was she there for the gutting?
I would assume not.
Huh.
And that's why they felt so strongly that when their wives could confirm that mid-November, their husband's farts just smell dank like deer guts, that this has to be what's happening.
Yeah. I want to say that you put a nail in the coffin on this one, but I can't say that you put a nail in the coffin. I think there's a lot of unanswered. There's a lot of unanswered questions.
I feel pretty confident that it's in your head.
No doubt.
I don't have this problem. I think that my nose isn't hairy enough to hold the old particles that are liberated. Okay, hit me another one, Spencer.
Another one is looking at if the Farmer's Almanac is accurate.
Yeah, are there still holdouts that think that it is?
There's multiple of these. There's the old Farmer's Almanac and the Farmer's Almanac, both of which have sold tens of millions of copies. Uh-huh. Like, these are still very, very popular.
Who puts this out?
The Farmer's Almanac and the old Farmer's Almanac.
Oh, so that's like the name of the... Okay.
Yes, they're separate publications, but they both kind of dabble in the same thing.
The Farmer's Almanac and the old Farmer's Almanac.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine a lot of people are like, well, I'll take the old one.
So, like, what's your familiarity with the Farmer's Almanac?
I've never read one.
My familiarity, we would always have them when I was young. And my familiarity, I'll speak to it this way. Like growing up, people would have a thing like, an attitude about the Farmer's Almanac was kind of like, you can argue all you want, and I don't know how they do what they do, but, right?
Yeah. Yeah, like
they would defend it,
mm-hmm.
and they'd be like, well, I can't explain, it's beyond explanation, I don't know, but it's just always something to it.
And they just, like, exist in grocery store checkout aisles where you pick one up and thumb through it.
Yeah, you can buy, like, a bunch of stupid stuff about celebrities. You can buy the Farmer's Almanac.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, when they come out, this is still a thing that news stations cover them and say the Farmer's Almanac just came out and we are in for a long, wet winter or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that was the example that was used this year, that this is going to be a really rough winter.
Okay.
So I wanted to look in, because I liked these things. Like, I took value in them when I was a kid. If my grandfather would say something about the Farmer's Almanac that they had next to the toilet about, oh, man, there's going to be a lot of ice for ice fishing this year.
Yeah.
Shoot, those sloughs are going to freeze out because of how nasty of a winter it's going to be. So that's how it related to me as an outdoorsman. But they also have a tons of other stuff in there, like when you should plant your tomatoes. How to heal mosquito bites.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. But their big thing are these super long-range forecasts about what the year's weather is going to be like.
Yeah. It's kind of in the same, I feel like the gopher, the groundhog that comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. So both of these publications started in the late 1700s and early 1800s.
Wow.
And they won't give up what their formula is, how they come up with what the weather is going to be 8 months from now.
Mm-hmm.
But they will say that it's an exclusive mathematical and astronomical formula that relies on sunspot activity, tidal action, planetary position, and many other factors.
Hmm. I didn't know they even went that far.
They don't want to give you the whole formula, but a little bit
it's
of it.
It's proprietary.
Right. The Farmer's Almanac actually claims to be 80 to 85% accurate each year. That's from their own editors and publishers.
Uh-huh.
That's their number, is that their forecasts are that accurate. And how these really came into popularity was in, what year was it? 1816. They inadvertently, but correctly, predicted that there was going to be snow in July. And what had happened was there was a volcano in Indonesia that exploded, and it caused a summer that had like rain, sleet, and snow. So they correctly predicted this weather forecast that was determined by a volcano.
And leveraged that into hundreds of years of misinformation.
And they said, look at this.
Yeah.
And then it just became a thing that, oh, they are onto something here. So that was how it gained popularity in the early 1800s.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. So I reached out to some actual meteorologists to ask them about this.
Can I ask a quick question?
Mm-hmm.
Has it been owned like by a family or the same company, switched hands many times over the years?
That I'm not sure about. So, actual meteorologists, they are in agreement that this is not accurate at all. The one said it's difficult enough to do a 5-day forecast, like let alone a 6-month forecast or an 8-month forecast or even a 10-day forecast. So it's just not that easy to pull off. And when it comes to those secret formulas like solar activity, weather experts point out that there's no scientific backing for those methods at all.
there's no scientific backing for translating sunspots in the weather
exactly.
patterns.
Yep, that's not something that modern day meteorologists use at all.
Okay.
And like the simplest way to put this is that these almanacs are to meteorology as to what astrology is to astronomy.
Oh.
So they're creating these horoscopes that are just vague enough and broad enough that they could be applied to almost anything with some amount of accuracy.
My wife just went to a tarot card reader, and boy, was he off about a couple things. Including that she was single.
Really?
Because she didn't have her wedding ring on that day. He's laying the groundwork. You're single. She's like, no, I'm married and I have three children.
Yeah. Same kind of pseudoscience.
So did they come in with like, is there sort of a, how right are they?
Well, like the numbers that are out there as far as them being 80 to 85% accurate, that's internally, that's their own numbers. Yeah. So they can say whatever they want. Like I said, it's just vague enough that it could apply to any winter that we ever have.
Yeah. We have a book where you can look up your birthday and it tells you about you.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like it's like astrology, but a little bit different too. In every description someone reads, everyone's like, if you confuse it, like when it's your birthday and you read it, you're like, oh my gosh. They're like, a lot of times you're a pretty nice guy, but sometimes you're not a nice guy. And I'm like, dude, how'd they know? But then like you can trick people and on their birthday, read them some different birthday thing. And they're like, oh my God.
So true.
Just like a lot of times you have good luck, but sometimes you have bad luck. You're a good friend, but when you've had enough, you've had enough. And people are like, oh my God, it's me.
That hits home.
That's everybody.
So what's next for Fact Checker?
I don't know.
What's the one you want to do, but you're scared to do?
Elk urine.
Yeah. Besides that, there is a good example of one that I would love to know the answer to, but when I've looked into it, I've just never came away confident that I could like report on this well and say one way or the other that this is a fact or fiction.
Okay.
That being, does a rutting buck taste worse?
Like, can you taste the rut in a buck?
Yeah. And that's one of the things that makes this hard is like, what is a rutting buck? Like, how do you define a rutting buck? Is it only in that week where they're breeding, or is it a buck killed in mid-October or early December? Does it make it taste worse? Does it make it taste different? All those things like kind of make that a difficult one to tackle. And when I did start looking into this, I got into like the beef industry.
Yeah,
where when these critters are going through and getting slaughtered, occasionally they have dark cutters.
Yep.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, red cutter, dark cutter, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's where the meat is so dark, like a healthy, I guess, cow's meat would be like, I don't know, a pink to a light red. Yep. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah.
A dark cutter is like almost purple.
And it has to do with stress levels, right?
Exactly. Yep. And they've looked into what causes the stress of these critters. Is it the poking and prodding with tools? Is it like the loud noises at the slaughterhouse? Is it transporting them? Is it the lack of feed? Like, what is the number one cause?
Is it no, because they're in the line of death and they can hear their friends bellowing ahead of them? They know that the death is imminent.
So what they determine is that the number one thing that causes a dart cutter is the interaction with unfamiliar animals when they get to these slaughter facilities, and all of a sudden
that's a leading contributor of stress
for cattle to be a dart cutter.
That's what
that
I mean,
was
yeah.
the number one thing that caused dart cutters.
That he gets mixed in with a bunch of animals he's not familiar with,
right? Whether that be like unfamiliar cattle, or it could be pigs, I guess. Could be bison, it could be elk, who knows.
Yeah.
I guess it didn't I don't recall it expanding.
Phil caught himself a fish.
Yay!
Phil!
Hell yeah!
Phil, it's like your first fish you ever
Hold
caught.
On.
That's my
take
second.
A of this.
Take a picture of Phil for the podcast studio.
Phil the engineer.
What's your current picture in there, Phil?
I got nothing.
That's great, Phil, because he's got his headset on. It makes him look like an engineer.
Yeah.
a pilot.
So your
nice
photo,
work,
Phil. You're the only person whose photo's not in the studio.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay, go on though.
So being around unfamiliar animals was the number one cause. So if you took and you wanted to apply that to deer and say, like, would that stress out deer during the rut? They run into all kinds of like unfamiliar deer that they haven't seen before. But there has to be a difference between like an ox that was domestically created over 10,000 years than a wild whitetail duking it out in the rut, doing something that they've always done.
I think another interesting thing to look at when you get around to this, when you talk to meat scientists, is be that leading into their reproductive season, there has to be there's got to be some kind of hormonal shift going on.
Yeah.
Like, I'm guessing there's like an increase of some hormones and a decrease in other hormones. And that could obviously have some kind of impart on the taste. I had a guy in Scotland one time tell me that in the German market, you know, everybody's always like here, like, oh, I don't like it, it's too gamey. Mm-hmm. That when it comes to like in Germany, when they're buying red deer for commercial sale, they like stags during the roar. So maybe they're wrong.
Right.
Fact check those sons of bitches.
Yeah. And that was,
because they might be operating under some kind of erroneous assumption about what makes meat they like.
And there is like part of that that makes this difficult is, like I said, what is tasting worse or tasting more gamey? Because I think during these slaughterhouse studies, it's like 1% of American cattle are considered dark cutters.
Okay.
But in Europe, it's like 3%.
Oh.
So is it that they have more stressed out animals, or do they have a higher tolerance for being a dark cutter? So that's also something that makes this hard.
It would
to
be
like
the opposite.
Really
it would mean
down.
That they have a lower tolerance, right?
That they're more likely to declare an animal a dark cutter in Europe.
Correct. Yeah, that's what I meant.
Because I'm guessing a dark cutter gets pitched.
I think it gets turned into like dog food.
Yeah.
Probably depends on what facility you're in. But that's one that I wouldn't feel like I could do justice to the question.
So you're not doing it?
Probably won't cover it because it would be too hard to nail down. I'm not sure that you could have a right answer one way or the other.
And you like to come in clean.
Yes. I want someone to read it and then feel confident that what they read is in fact factual.
The straight dope.
Yeah. But there's got to be, I mean, a lot of people study meat.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be other things other than just dark cutters that have been studied by meat scientists.
Yeah, I'd like you to talk to a couple meat scientists before you give this one up.
Uh-huh.
Do your due diligence.
Okay.
Now that you've told people what they won't be able to read about at themeteater.com,
right.
What are some things that people can look forward to?
More fact checkers?
Yeah, but give me a specific. You don't have any in the old pipeline?
If you have an idea for a fact checker, write to us at factchecker@themeteater.com. factchecker@themeteater.com.
Do you ever do the ones that are like so obviously wrong, but it's still something you hear about? Like that a porcupine can throw its quills?
Yes. Yeah, so like I said,
do you just not do those because they're so stupid?
I'm hesitant to, like I said, create a scarecrow man for these.
Yeah.
There was one that I was really intrigued by, but I'm like, this is so stupid that why would I even put any time into writing this? And that was that the moon phase, when you're hanging and aging meat, affects the quality of the meat.
Oh, wow. Oh,
yeah. Okay. Oh, that's not worth doing.
No, I know, and that's an example of...
Because it needs to be a full moon so that the moon dust falls down to add the extra flavor.
Sure.
Have you done... I know we've written about this.
Uh-huh.
We've covered this, but we haven't covered it in fact-checker form, and it'd be kind of like recycling an old idea, but it might be time again, because there's always new research coming out about high winds. What do high winds do for deer movements? What does the full moon do for deer movements? I think you could keep whittling away at that.
Yeah.
Because those are changing things all the time.
Yeah. Things we could certainly cover for Fact Checker that I think we've covered in other parts of our website, whether it be Mark Kenny on the podcast.
Exactly.
Or something Pat Durkin has written. But yeah, there are as many misconceptions around whitetail movement as there are, I think, anything else in the outdoor community.
Yeah. You could also fact check, is Giannis a true outdoorsman?
What source
is, you know, it would be is it? Giannis really not a true outdoorsman?
Mm-hmm.
And then once you came to the conclusion there, you could then compare who is more of an outdoorsman, Steven or Giannis.
There you go.
That's a good series.
But I was going to add to you the email. If you have a fact checker, you know, email to write in. But if you're still stuck on the gut smell poops, mm-hmm. you should just attach your gut fart smell in that email and send it in, then we can all smell it.
See attachment.
Bottle it up.
Love it. All right. Real quick. Me and Yanni are still running for president. That's not changed. The campaign's going to heat up more later.
Yeah. Buy yourself an AI t-shirt because remember all the proceeds, profits. How do we have to put it? I always forget.
Just go for access.
Basically, all the money that
we're
making.
We're launching an access project.
Yeah.
We're going to support an access project with all of our money that Ronella Patel's 2020 raises. Campaign slogan, hit it, Yanni.
Better hunting and fishing for America.
I hung a Ronella Patel's 2020 sign in my garage.
Nice.
And I used blaze orange duct tape to hold it up.
I like it.
So when people walk in, they notice it.
Right. Close their eye.
And then it's probably all sold out. It's probably, by the time this airs, maybe. Might be all sold out. A lot of the venues are sold out. We have an 11-city tour coming up.
Yeah. Biggest one, though, is down in Mesa. So you might, if you want to go somewhere warm this spring, maybe check out that venue.
Yeah, Meat Eater Live, off the air. A lot of them are sold out. All the VIP tickets are gone everywhere. But there might be some tickets left. Check it out.
Yeah, you never know.
No, I'm saying by the time this airs.
Oh, right.
Currently, there are a number of venues still selling tickets. Yeah.
And maybe we'll add a couple dates. You never know. Check in.
So come check it out. We'll have some, maybe we'll like try to roll an element of fact checker into it. People can shout out lies, and then we'll live fact check. And then we're also still trying to work out a deal. Are you familiar with this Dollar Dance with Cal for $20 for conservation?
I am. When you brought that up,
I got
on
no
the
idea
podcast,
how that'll work.
I couldn't believe that like everyone else had not heard of it before.
Dollar Dance?
Yeah, that's just like a staple at weddings.
My wife kind of half doesn't believe me.
Really?
And she grew up in the same state I did.
Wow. Yeah.
You'd go to a wedding. I'll tell you a couple things that happen at weddings.
There's a Dollar Dance at my wedding.
For a buck?
Yeah.
You guys did a dollar.
Yes.
Your wife be dancing her ass off. Trying to raise some money. Did you guys take spawn bag material and tie up cocktail peanuts and those pastel colored mints in a spawn sack?
No.
What?
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. Almonds, not peanuts, right?
No.
For what?
In the old days, when I was a boy, when people got married, you'd go and on your plate would be like spawn bag material, like the mesh spawns, the stuff you use to tie a spawn bag. And it'd be full of those red cocktail peanuts and those little pastel-colored pink and blue mints. And you'd tie a bow on it, and that was like an appetizer snack waiting at your seat.
Yeah.
And you'd eat that, and then you'd eat old people's ones that didn't eat theirs, and then eventually there'd be the dollar dance.
It's like a party favor.
And then someone's uncle would get wasted and tie his necktie around his head, and it was about that time you went home.
Sounds like most weddings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you're writing in your fact checker things, how to pull off Dollar Dance with Cal for $20 for conservation, because Cal's very stressed out about it, the logistics of it. But I have a feeling, I have a vision, and a feverish dream it came to me that this is something that needs to happen at the live shows. I've also been talking to my buddy from back home who he had a cover band when we were in high school, and, I'm thinking about having him for our Detroit show. I'm thinking about having him crafting up a quick run through of all of Nugent's songs that are relevant to hunting and fishing for an open form conversation about those said songs. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Meteor Live off the air. You join us on the ice right now in the big giant Eskimo shanty that's bigger than our podcast studio. Phil caught the second fish ever. In black jeans with a hole in the knee.
That's right. Good luck charm.
Hey, don't forget.
My son's been slaying the whole time.
Yeah, Jimmy's definitely caught more fish than anybody else on this trip.
He quit fishing.
Remember also go and support our other podcasts in the Meteor Podcast Network.
Tell about Yanni.
Go check out.
Phil just caught his third fish of his life.
You got
and he let it swallow the hook.
Yeah,
I got a hemostat.
It's going to die.
Phil just killed.
Jimmy's gonna fillet it later.
Phil killed a fish.
Ryan Callahan's Cal's Week in Review. Ben O'Brien's The Hunting Collective. Remy Warren's. Oh God!
Cutting the distance.
I didn't know that one.
Cutting the distance. Mark Kenyon's Wire to Hunt.
Rump Fresh, which is all done for the year.
It's done for the year.
Hemostat. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we got to go. We got to do surgery on a bluegill. Thanks for joining.